And now, for our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Previously in Deathstalker Destiny.
The Mater Mundi is an unconscious gestalt. The Espers honestly don't know what they've been doing.
We will create an army of manifests to carry out our will in the physical world.
Well then, you'll just have to send them a wake-up call.
Jack Random killed all these people. He has to be stopped.
You mean killed?
Parliament will authorize an extraordinarily high bounty for his head. Kill him, Ruby, if you can.
No problem.
The Mater Mundi is no more. We have moved beyond that.
I have a plan to defeat Shub. I'm going to make direct mental contact and use the power of your augmented minds to maintain the contact, no matter how hard they try to break away. And then, it's our humanity versus the AI's logic.
Parliament follows where we lead. Your people. The Chojiros? No, Robert. Blue Block. Be reasonable and persuasive, and you and your beautiful intended can have a long and happy life together. Persist in being our enemy, and she shall die.
Someone has to reopen 00.
Nanotech is forbidden, and with good reason. If what happened on 00 had got off planet...
But it didn't, so its secrets should still be intact.
Are you volunteering to go there, Sir Random?
I can think of one brave, honorable, and very dutiful captain. You might just be crazy enough to do it.
Of course. The good Captain Silence.
We have had some good times together, haven't we, Jack?
Sure. When you weren't trying to kill me for one reason or another.
I wouldn't really have killed you. Not as long as there wasn't any money in it.
Ruby, don't die.
I got you a good one with my knife. You're dying too, Jack.
I know. It doesn't matter.
I'm tired. Let me rest.
Oh God, Ruby. I loved you so very much.
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Deathstalker Destiny. Narrated and directed by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Acel Ford, Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, David Coyne, Anne Flosnick, Kate Torrey, Nick Sampson, James Konachek, Corey James, Tim Carlin, David Butler, and Mort Shelby. Graphic audio sound design by Dan Smith. Episode 4, A Royal Wedding. Captain John Silence sat slumped in his command chair on the bridge of the Dauntless, studying the enigmatic image of the planet 00 on the main view screen, and felt very much like throwing something heavy and sharp-edged at the screen. The Dauntless had been heading toward the Rim, and then the Dark Void, until a last-minute course change from Parliament had brought them here, to the one planet in the Empire possibly more dangerous than the endless night of the Dark Void. 00. The planet no one comes home from. Under strict quarantine for centuries, ever since the nanotech got loose, there could be anything down there. Parliament hoped there was a cure for the nanoplague, and had sent Silence and his crew to look for it. No one asked what they thought about it. The planet looked quite pretty from orbit, like a pastel-colored rose with hidden poisonous thorns. Silence dug into his bowl with his chopsticks. He didn't normally eat on the bridge. It encouraged sloppiness and divided attention, but he couldn't risk leaving the bridge now they were actually here. It was better than protein cubes, but only just. 00, a planet so dangerous, even Shub stayed well clear of it. The place where Empire science had been allowed to run mad, meddling with the wellsprings of creation itself. But Silence and his crew had a reputation for dealing with impossibly dangerous situations and surviving, and when all was said and done, they were still considered expendable. So, here they were. There should have been another Star Cruiser here, standing guard to enforce the quarantine, but with ships at a premium, it had long ago been called away to fight in the war. Current thinking was that anyone stupid enough to land on 00 deserved every extremely unpleasant thing that happened to them. Silence had already decided not to risk any more than the smallest practical landing party. Too bad he had to be one of them.
Captain, picking up signs of two unidentified craft in high orbit.
The voice belonged to his new comm officer, Morag Tal. She was tall and blonde, sharp and intelligent, and eager to please. She also seemed impossibly young, but then a lot of his crew seemed that way to Silence. Possibly because most of the old familiar faces had died on one impossible mission or another, or been posted to where their experience could be better used. And since there were no experienced replacements anymore, Silence realized his thoughts were drifting, and made himself pay attention as the comm officer put the new images up on the viewscreen.
A golden Haydenman vessel and a Shub ship, Captain. Low-level shields hid them until we were practically on top of them. No hostile reactions as yet.
Run full sensor scans, and you can try raising them on the comm, though I doubt they'll talk to us. I'm mostly interested in why they haven't already opened fire on us.
Shall I put the ship on full alert?
Not yet. If they were going to cause trouble, they'd have done it by now. Shub and the Haydenmen. Any signs they've been fighting each other?
Sensor scans complete, Captain. No signs of any external damage. Energy levels are very low, probably running on automatic systems only. No power to their weapon systems. And no life signs, none at all. Neither ship responding to comm inquiries. It seems likely both ships are deserted.
Interesting. If they haven't been fighting, what could have happened that was so bad they had to abandon ship for the dubious safety of 00?
Insufficient evidence as yet, Captain.
That was a rhetorical question, Tal. All right, if there are Haydenmen down there and Shub agents, the sooner we get dirtside, the better. Come, officer, locate Investigator Carrion and have him report to the briefing lounge.
Aye, sir.
No one on the Dauntless crew had any time for the traitor and outlaw Carrion, even if he had been officially pardoned, but no one was dumb enough to show it openly. Silence tended to have very sharp and unpleasant ways of dealing with any discourtesies to his old friend. It was surprising how many toilets there were that always needed cleaning on a ship the size of the Dauntless, especially when you were only issued a toothbrush to work with.
Meanwhile, maintain high orbit. Stay out of the planet's atmosphere. There's no telling how high the rogue nanos were thrown when the scientific base exploded. There could still be some floating about up there, just waiting for something hard and solid to come along so they could continue their dirty work. Maintain full shields at all times.
Beg pardon, Captain, but indefinite use of full shields will mean a serious drain on our power.
Comm officer, you seem intent on telling me things I already know. I am quite aware of my own ship's limitations, thank you. I am less sure of 00's ability to do us harm, so we are taking no chances at all. Now, send down a couple of remote probes. With a little luck, they might last long enough to send back something useful.
The comm officer nodded quickly and fired off two probes. They were basically just information-gathering packages inside heavy armor. They couldn't be shielded and still do their work, so that left them vulnerable to nano-attack. The whole bridge crew watched unobtrusively as the two probes plunged into 00's deceptively tranquil atmosphere. The crew tense and strained as they waited for something to happen.
Tal, put up the incoming sensor readings on the main view screen.
The probes sent back the first direct information in centuries on 00's condition. Heavy cloud cover, but no storm systems. Air content and temperatures within acceptable human limits. Gravity normal, which was a little surprising, given the somewhat greater size of the planet. No life signs. The probes were just beginning to make out the shapes of the three main continents when the figures coming in suddenly became uncertain. They flickered from one extreme value to another in impossibly wide swings, and then began to contradict one another. New visual images appeared on the view screen, harsh and jagged, in ugly colors and sharp angles that were subtly disturbing to the eye. Silence felt a headache building in his left temple, and his eyes felt as if they'd been sandpapered. And then the probe shut down, and the screen went blank. And all on the bridge heaved varying sighs of relief.
No more signals, Captain. Something was definitely affecting the probes there at the end, so that information cannot be depended on. But I think I've sorted out some useful data from the earlier transmissions.
More acceptable images appeared on the main view screen, showing the three main landmasses. Jagged mountain ranges crossed the great continents, large enough to be seen clearly, even from so high an altitude. The landmasses were composed largely of bare rock, with volcanic vents and a tendency to earthquakes powerful enough to reshape the coastlines at regular intervals. 00 had been an unpleasant, largely uninhabited world, of no real use for colonizing and little intrinsic mineral value, which was why it had been chosen for nanotech research in the first place.
That's all we got, Captain. The probes lasted approximately 47 seconds. The information they were sending back right at the end cannot be considered reliable. The probes appeared to be changing as the nanos worked on them. I'm not sure what they were becoming, but it sure as hell wasn't anything I recognized.
Understood. See if they come up with any useful insights.
Captain Silence swiveled in his chair to look at the tall, cadaverous figure standing patiently at his side. Klaus Morrell was the new ship's Esper, skeletally thin and dressed all in white. He looked rather like a ghost that hadn't been invited to any feast in a long time. The Dauntless was his 16th posting in 3 years, and Silence was beginning to suspect he knew why.
So, you picking up anything of interest yet?
If I had, I'd have told you. Peculiar bloody place you've brought me to. This far out, I shouldn't be picking up anything, but I'm getting something right on the edge of my mind. Not so much thoughts, more like the background murmur of the universe with everyone talking at once. It makes no sense at all. And it's really very irritating. You'll have to get me a lot closer before I can be of any use. And I really wish I hadn't just said that. I would like to make it very clear that I would rather gnaw my own leg off without anesthetic than pay a personal visit to that misbegotten toilet of a world below us. Something very bad's going to happen down there.
Think of it as a chance to stretch your legs. You don't want to miss out on all the fun, do you?
If at all possible, yes. Am I to gather from the way you're looking at me that I have already volunteered to join your landing party?
Got it in one. You must have read my mind.
Ho, ho, ho. Bloody officer humor.
Down below, in one of the Dauntless's less crowded recreation areas, the man known as Carrion sat alone at a table, drinking lukewarm coffee at the end of an uninspiring meal. He could have eaten all his meals in his cabin, and would have preferred to, but Silence had ordered him to get out in public, so that the crew would have a chance to get used to him. So far, it didn't seem to be working. People avoided talking to Carrion unless they absolutely had to, and then treated him with cold courtesy at best. Only their respect for their captain kept them from open insults or even attempted violence. They looked at the man in Trader's Black, and saw only the investigator who went native on the planet Unseelie and fought beside the alien Ashrai against his own kind. Carrion, the sworn protector of humanity who became a traitor and an outlaw because he loved an alien race more than his own honor and duty. And who was to say they were wrong? No one sat at his table with him. People ostentatiously chose to avoid even the tables nearest him. Truth be told, Carrion took comfort in his isolation. After Silence gave the order to scorch Unseelie from orbit and wiped out every living creature on the planet, Carrion had lived there alone for many years, his only company, the ghosts of the murdered Ashrai. Apart from one brief period a few years back, when Silence had returned to drag him unwillingly from his preferred isolation to help investigate the mystery of Base 13, Carrion had remained aloof from all humans and preferred it that way. He wouldn't have known what to do with human companionship, even if it had been offered to him. He no longer considered himself human, and believed he had little left in common with those who did. He felt no need for company or conversation. He felt no need for anything much anymore. except perhaps for revenge on the rogue eyes of Shub, who had destroyed what little sanctuary and reason for living he'd had left. Anyone else would surely have gone mad, left alone on an alien world for so many years. But Carrion had found a kind of absolution in his solitude. The Ashrai had altered him so that he could survive where no other human could, and Unseelie became his home. He walked for hours through the gleaming metallic forests, listening to the wind sing in their spiky branches, and sometimes hearing the song of the dead Ashrai too. The trees weren't just trees, though he was never sure quite what else they might be, but there was a harmony to be found in their embrace, and he became a part of it. He was at peace, with no one to hate and no one to hate him. His wars were over. Or so he thought, till the great metal ships came from Shub, filling the skies with their horrid shapes, and tore the metal trees out of the ground until none remained anywhere on Unseelie. And who else was there left for Carrion to turn to, except his old friend and enemy, Captain John Silence? They'd struck a kind of truce, and now here Carrion was, on a human ship again, an investigator again. It was a harsh kind of joke, but then the universe was like that in Carrion's experience. The dead forests and the ghosts of the Ashrai cried out for vengeance, and if this was all he had left to give his life purpose, it was better than nothing. He missed Unseelie so much. It was the only place where he'd ever been happy. A man came up and sat down beside Carrion. He did so quickly, almost rudely, as though not wanting to give Carrion any time to object. He was young, barely out of his teens, with dark eyes and a set, determined mouth. Carrion recognized the face, and the newcomer saw that he did. He shifted his gangling frame uncertainly in his chair, and then nodded jerkily.
You do know me. I wasn't sure you'd remember.
Of course I remember. You're the one who tried to kill me when I first came aboard the Dauntless.
Yes, that's right. I'm Micah Baron, ordinary crewman. My father was one of the men you killed in the war on Unseelie.
I don't remember him. There were so many. I'd regret his death if that makes any difference. Do you still wish to kill me?
No.
Baron was looking down at his hands, clasped tightly together before him, on top of the table. The knuckles were white with strain.
The captain vouches for you. Called you his friend. And the captain is a good and honorable man. I'd die for the captain. I've followed his career since I was a boy. It was a way of making contact with a father I barely knew. After he died, I couldn't wait to be old enough so I could join up too. I've tried to read up on the Unseelie War, but most of the files are still restricted. Parliament keeps promising more open government, but I'll believe that when I see it. So really, there are only two places I can go to find out the truth about what really happened on Unseelie all those years ago, what the war was really about, and why my father had to die there. One is the captain, and the other is you. And after my previous behavior, there's no way the captain's ever gonna agree to speak to me again. Except maybe at my court-martial. So that just leaves you.
It is not a time I care to remember. So many died on both sides. Much of me died during the war. And I've already said I don't remember your father.
But you're my only link to him. To the times that shaped and killed him. Tell me about the Ashrai. What were they like?
You mean, why did I side with them against humanity?
Carrion looked out across the room with haunted eyes, not seeing what was there, lost in yesterday.
You have to remember, I was raised as an investigator, taken from my parents as a small child, raised to be apart from the humanity I was trained to serve and protect. Taught the only good alien was a dead alien. But the Ashrai were wild and glorious and so free. Like every dream I'd ever had. Not beautiful, not by human standards. But they were so pure, uncomplicated, savage and unrestrained. They flew through the air like mighty dragons. And when they sang, they were creatures of awe and wonder. Angels of a different world. So much more than the grubby little humans who threatened to destroy them just so the Empire could mine some metals from the forests. Captain Silence was my friend then. I tried to explain, to make him understand, but he saw only his orders and his duty. We were both so much younger then.
But he offered the Ashrai reservations, places they could live freely, away from the machines mining the forests.
Is that the story they told to excuse what they did? The Ashrai were linked to the forests. They would have withered and died, restricted to artificial borders, dying inch by inch as the trees died. Silence knew that. There was no offer of reservations. And so war became inevitable, and I knew which side I belonged on. I had sung the song of the Ashrai, seen the world anew through their eyes, and I could never go back. Back to being only merely human.
Tell me about the war.
Kerrion frowned. It wasn't hard to call back the memories. They were never far from him.
The Ashrai were strong and fast and powerful. Their numbers filled the skies. The Empire had explosives and energy weapons. Ashrai blood fell like rain, and the human dead piled up until a man couldn't see over them. Ashrai-sized storms fought Empire battle wagons. There seemed no end to the dead and the suffering. And I was right there in the middle of it, my hands dripping with the blood of those who had once been my fellow crewmen. Sometimes I knew their faces, more often not. I never thought the war would go on for so long. I thought eventually the Empire would get tired of losing men and go away. I didn't realize how badly they needed those medals. I never thought they'd order Silence to scorch the planet. I never thought he'd do it. I can still hear the Ashrai screaming as the energy beam slammed down from orbit. There was nothing I could do to save them. I dug a deep hole and pulled it in after me, protected by my psionic powers. They seemed to go on screaming forever, until finally, the scorching stopped, and there was only silence. I dug my way out to find myself the only inhabitant of an empty world. But the trees were still alive in their way, and tied so closely to the Ashrai that not even death could fully separate them. Their ghosts remained, and their song. They forgave me. I never did. Now the forests are gone, and only I remain to tie the Ashrai to the worlds of the living.
They were your family.
Yes. The family I'd never known before. I was their adopted son, and I loved them with all my heart. Silence was my friend, but I never felt as close to him as I did to the Ashrai. I don't think he ever really forgave me for that.
Are you and he friends now?
We do our best. But I... Just a moment. New orders are coming through on my comm implant.
Kerrion frowned.
I must leave you now. It seems I am to join the captain's landing party on 00.
Ask the captain to take me too. I'm not afraid. I volunteer. I need to prove myself to the captain after what happened before.
When you tried to kill me?
Yes.
No one knows what we'll be facing on 00. No one knows if any of us will return.
I don't care. I need to do this.
Very well. Come with me to the briefing. I will vouch for you. But I can promise nothing where the captain is concerned. He has always placed duty before friendship.
Baron looked at Kerrion for a long moment.
Why are you doing this? I thought I'd have to get down on my knees and beg you for a second chance.
Please don't. I'd find that very embarrassing. As to why, let's just say I, of all people, understand the worth of a second chance.
The briefing lounge was a mess. Half the view screens weren't working, and most of the computers were showing their naked guts to the air. The Dauntless had been undergoing extensive refitting and upgrading when Silence was suddenly called on to take his ship out again in a hurry, with a lot of the work still left undone. The technicians had been catching up as best they could during the voyage, but the briefing lounge had a priority number so low you couldn't even see it except in a really good light. So, of course, the techs had chosen the one day when it was really needed to tear everything apart. When Carrion and Baron arrived, they found Silence shooing out half a dozen techs with one hand on his gun.
All right, people, clear out and be back in the hour. This is an important briefing.
They left, and Silence turned to greet Carrion.
Tex, trying to boss me around just because they've got a work chit. Where were they when my coffee maker wasn't working, and all I could get on my view screen was the damned porn channel? Baron, what are you doing here, mister? Why aren't you at your post?
Captain, I...
He's with me. We have reached an understanding. He wishes to join the landing party on 00.
Really? He doesn't look crazy. Give me one good reason why I should take him.
Because I ask it.
Ah, what the hell. We can always use him as a human shield if need be. Follow me into the briefing lounge.
Once inside, Carrion nodded to the Esper Moral, who nodded back. Silence gestured at the waiting chairs, and the four of them arranged themselves before the one working view screen. Moral was careful to put the captain between himself and Carrion. Everyone else pretended not to notice. Silence looked at each of his team in turn.
I'm restricting this first landing party to an absolute minimum, partly because of the risk, and partly because I want to avoid stirring anything up down there. We'll have no way of knowing what we're getting into until we're well into it. And by then, it'll probably be far too late to call for help. Carrion and I are going because we have the most experience in dealing with strange and dangerous alien territory, and because both of us have more than normal abilities. Moral is going because as ship's Esper, he's our most experienced telepath. And Baron, you're going to be our guinea pig. You get to test the temperature of any strange waters we may encounter before the rest of us dive in. Still want to go?
Yes, sir. I want nothing more than to prove myself in your eyes again. To be the loyal crewman my father was.
I'm not looking for a hero, boy. I want a crewman who'll keep his head, follow orders, and come back with useful information. Is that clear?
Entirely clear, Captain.
Silence turned back to Carrion and Moral, dividing his attention between them.
If we die, the Empire will have to decide whether to risk another landing party on 00, or send the Dauntless onto its primary mission in the Dark Void. Our mission here is purely information gathering. We're not here to solve the mysteries of 00, except where they coincide with our search for something that might help the Empire cope with the current nano-plague. If we do turn up anything, and live to tell of it, further scientific teams will arrive later to dig out the details. That's not our job. Now, you three are about to view recorded material that has been restricted for centuries. It carries the highest possible security rating, as does whatever information we may bring back from our little trip. You are not to discuss 00 with anyone, no matter how high-ranking, without checking with me first. Contravening this order may be punishable by death, and even I couldn't save you then. Pay close attention to the recording, and save any questions till afterwards.
He paused a moment to let the seriousness of his words sink in. A series of security warnings scrolled up before them.
You're about to see a recording of the last log entry from 00 Scientific Base, made by Base Commander Jorgensen. She downloaded it into a security buoy and blasted it into high orbit, just before everything went to hell.
He paused again, remembering another time like this. Then it had been he and Investigator Frost, studying the last words from Unseelie's Base 13. But then, a lot of Silence's career seemed to consist of cleaning up after other people's messes. The recording began, and he decided he didn't really have anything more worth saying. The view screen filled with the head and shoulders of Base Commander Jorgensen. She was a pleasant enough-looking woman in her early 30s, her generous mouth set in a grim line. She wore her long dark hair in a single functional braid, draped over her left shoulder. The camera pulled back to show her seated before a desk, littered with scattered papers. A hand disruptor lay within easy reach. It looked large and clumsy compared to the modern-day model. Somebody had taken a shot at the commander. There was a large scorch mark darkened with dried blood on her left side, and there were beads of sweat on her forehead. She stared out of the view screen with determination and desperate control.
Last report from Base Omega, 00. Security has been breached. The base is contaminated. Nanotech has spread beyond the base and out into the planet's ecosystem. God knows what it will do there. It's all Marlow's fault, damn him. He was in overall charge of the scientific team. Impeccable record. But while everyone else was working on the official experiments, he had his own very unofficial experiments going on. He had this dream of becoming superhuman, of having the nanos make him over into something far beyond human limitations. He exposed himself to his own specially coded nanos, and unfortunately, they didn't kill him. We have no idea of what he's become. He disappeared from the base several hours ago. From what we can understand of his notes, he coded the nanos to rework them from the DNA up and program them for open-ended evolution. He then either released them into the base or they escaped. They were programmed to multiply endlessly, using any and all available matter for base material. People inside the base have been changing. They don't look like superhumans to me. I've raised the base force shield so no one else can leave. I don't trust what people are becoming. There's been a lot of killing, physical transformations, strange shapes in the corridors. There are monsters and nightmares running loose in the base, and nothing seems to stop them. Every quarantine we set up is breached almost immediately. The nanos are everywhere. They're in me, too. I can feel them moving, changing things. So that leaves me only one option. I'm going to download this log into a buoy at the starport and then launch it by remote control. It's far enough away from the base that it should still be uncontaminated. And now I'm going to hit the base's self-destruct and blow us all to hell. Damn you, Marlowe. This is Base Commander Ingrid Jorgensen signing off.
Brave woman. Captain, I know it's been centuries, but the first question that occurs to me is, could Marlowe, or whatever he eventually became, still be down there on 00 somewhere? A man full of nanos programmed to eternally repair him could last a long, long time. Theoretically.
Everything's theoretical where nanos are concerned. Finding Marlowe could give us all the answers we need, assuming he's still able to understand the questions. But I don't think we should count on finding him. We don't know what's been happening on the planet's surface. After centuries of nanotech running loose, endlessly multiplying, there's no telling what we'll encounter. At one end of the scale, we might find a whole world gone into meltdown, like the people with the nanoplague. At the other end...
Yes?
You heard the commander. Strange shapes, monsters, nightmares.
Don't frighten the boy too much. We'll be taking every precaution. A pinnace will take us down to the planet's surface, protected by full energy shields. We will be equipped with personal full-body force shields, and then dropped under the surface from the pinnace. It will then return to high orbit, well away from the Dauntless, just in case, and stay there until we send for it. Full-body shields use up a lot of power very quickly. We'll have a maximum of 4 hours, and then the shields will collapse. So we better not steal beyond 00 when that happens.
4 hours is very short, even for just an information run, Captain. Are you proposing several visits?
Depends what we find on the first one, and whether we survive finding it.
Couldn't we improve our odds by wearing hard suits?
The others looked at Baron pityingly.
The nanos were programmed to interact with all matter they encountered. A hard suit would be just another snack to them.
What about the Shub and Haydenman forces? I mean, their ships are deserted, so the crews must be dirtside somewhere.
Whatever's left of them by now. They may have had force shields when they went down, but the power must have run out by now. They must have been exposed to the nanotech.
We can't know that for sure. Shub and Haydenman tech is more advanced than ours.
I'm still concerned with that bastard Marlowe. What he might have become after centuries of change.
Nanos coded for open-ended evolution. I wonder what you would find at evolution's end for humanity.
You should know if anyone, Captain. You're further along that road than the rest of us.
Morrell cut in smoothly, while silence was still glaring at Carrion.
Assuming Marlowe is still around in whatever shape or form, what are our orders, Captain? Do we try and apprehend him?
What would be the point? We daren't risk taking him off-planet for fear of spreading the nanos he's carrying. Sure, we could isolate him behind a series of force shields,
But all it would take is one power outage, one slip-up in security, and the whole ship would be contaminated. If the Empire even suspected the nanos might have got loose, we'd never be allowed to land again. Hell, they'd probably shoot us on sight just in case. I would. No, if we find him, he stays on 00. And I don't want you trying to read his mind either, Morrel. After all this time, who knows what his thoughts might have mutated into. You go in, and you might not come out again.
You're no fun anymore, you know that? What's the point of going down there if we don't take a few risks?
This from the man who wanted to mutilate himself rather than join the landing party. We will only be taking calculated risks, Morrel. You don't do one damn thing down there without my express permission, in advance. Is that clear?
So clear, it's positively dazzling, Captain. Be making me wear a bib next.
What was that?
Nothing, Captain, just clearing my throat.
All right. End of preliminary briefing. Morrel, since you're so keen to be up and going, you get to check out the pinnace and make sure it's ready for the drop. And take Baron with you. I want him familiarized with all the systems, just in case he has to pilot the ship back.
Morrel and Baron rose to their feet. Baron saluted Silence.
I won't let you down, Captain.
They left together. Silence waited till the door had shut behind them, and then looked at Carrion.
That boy is too keen to be real. Odds are he'll take the first chance he gets down below to shoot you in the back.
I don't think so, Captain. He's had any number of opportunities to try and kill me since his first attempt. And he has, if anything else, been conspicuous in his absence from the rest of the crew's silent disapproval.
But do you trust him?
I don't trust any human these days, Captain.
Fine. The Ashrai, are they still with you? We're a long way from their homeworld.
Of course they're still with me. They're dead. They can be anywhere they want, sometimes simultaneously. Apparently, death is very liberating.
I wish you'd stop calling them that. They're not really dead. They can't be.
You should know, Captain. You murdered them.
How do you think the Ashrai will react to visiting another dead world? Will they still come to your aid if needed?
Unknown. They don't always manifest when I call them, even at the best of times. They're not my pets. But I don't think they'd allow me to come to harm if they could prevent it.
Are you sure of that?
No, Captain. You destroyed the only surety I ever had when you scorched Unsealing.
Will you stop that? It was all a long time ago. I thought you'd forgiven me.
It isn't my place to forgive you. I survived.
We were friends once, Sean.
Yes, we were. But that was a long time ago, and neither of us is the man he was then. For what it's worth, I don't hate you anymore. I don't hate anyone. And perhaps only people who've been through the things we've suffered can ever really understand each other. I know why I'm here, John. Investigator Frost died, but you still needed someone at your side. Someone you could depend on. Someone who'd understand the more than human thing you're becoming. Who better than an old friend who isn't entirely human either? But that was then. This is now. And I'm not Frost. You have my support, Captain. Settle for that.
I'm sure other people don't have conversations like this.
The pinnace plunged down through the unusually calm atmosphere of 00, protected by the most powerful energy shields the ship's engines could produce. The pilot took them down fast. He'd already gone out of his way to make it very clear to his passengers that he didn't intend to spend 1 second longer in the nano-contaminated atmosphere than he absolutely had to. He had also prayed loudly to several gods, and kept taking one hand away from the controls to cross himself. Silence would have hit him if he'd been close enough, if only for being so damned obvious about it. As it was, Silence clung grimly to a nearby stanchion with both hands, and wished the trip down didn't feel quite so much like riding a crashing elevator. The Esper Klaus Morrel sat beside him, face perfectly composed, eyes calm and far away. Silence was convinced the Esper was only doing it despite him. Carrion and Baron sat opposite Silence, both lost in their own thoughts. Wrapped in his black cloak, the former investigator looked more like a bird of ill omen than usual. His power lance lay casually across his lap, the long staff of polished bone that was so powerful a weapon, its very ownership was a death sentence throughout the Empire.
Unless you were Carrion, and the Empire needed you. Baron sat quietly beside him, nervously checking his various bits of equipment over and over again. This was his first landing party, and he was determined not to screw up through lack of preparation. Silence certainly gave him marks for effort. They were heading for the original site of Base Omega, or at least the place where it used to be before Commander Jorgensen blew it to hell. Probably wouldn't be much left of it after all this time, but as it was the location of the original nano outbreak, there might still be a clue or two left behind. It was a long shot, but then that was typical of the mission. The whole pinnace shook suddenly as the pilot slammed on the brakes. They must be close to their destination. There were no external views from the craft, because the pinnace's sensors couldn't pierce the extra-strong energy shields, so the pilot had to fly by following centuries-old maps and a certain amount of dead reckoning. The pilot was not at all happy about this, and had said so loudly, several times.
God damn it, son of...
The pinnace continued to slow. The ship finally slowed to a halt, and the pilot turned around in his crash webbing to look back at his passengers.
All right, this is it. Everybody out. Hope you enjoyed the ride, and thanks for getting most of it in the sick bags. Anything you need, take it with you now, because I'm not coming back again till I have to.
He hit the lock release on his control panels, and the inner airlock door cycled open.
All right, this is how we're going to do it, just like we practiced. You all go into the lock, I shut the inner door and open the outer. You power up your individual shields, pray, and then jump. Your personal shields are programmed to phase you through the outer shields without me having to lower them, theoretically. No one's ever tried this before. If it doesn't work, feel free to come back and complain through a spirit board. Don't you just love being pioneers? Knew I should have held out for danger money.
How far is the drive to the ground?
Good question, Captain. Wish I had a good answer for you. If the ground is still where it's supposed to be, we should be hovering some 2 or 3 feet above it. But since this is the world where nanos rule, God alone knows what you're dropping into. Still, your shield should protect you from most things. Anything more I can do to cheer you up?
Yeah, you can keep your ears open in orbit and come and get us the hell out of here the minute I call you.
Silence led his team into the airlock, and the inner door cycled shut behind them. It was fairly cramped with all four of them crowded into the confined space, but Silence still felt unhappy at the thought of leaving it. He looked at the outer door. Part of him wanted it to open so he could get on with the mission, and part of him hoped it would seize up or malfunction so he wouldn't have to do this. There'd never been much that really scared him, even before the maze made him strong and fast and bloody hard to kill. But nanos, invisible tiny machines that could eat you up or transform you into anything at all, something you had no way of fighting, now that was spooky. But when the outer door finally cycled open, Silence was the first one out of the airlock, dropping into the unknown, leading by example. Because he was the captain, and that was his job. The pinnace force shields shimmered below him like the inside of a soap bubble, and then he was plunging through them and out the other side, and a bright light blinded him. By the time he'd realized it was just bright sunshine, his feet had already impacted against hard ground, and he had to fight to avoid falling on his ass. It really had been only a drop of a few feet after all. The others landed beside him, and Silence squinted up into the bright sky to watch the pinnace racing for the safety of open space above the atmosphere. He watched till it was safely out of sight, and then turned to check that his people were all right. He was reassured to see the faint shimmering of air around them that meant their full body shields were working. And only then did he turn to look at the world he'd landed on, and realized why the others were so quiet. In fact, everything looked extremely normal. The landing party was standing on a grassy plain that stretched away from miles before them. The sun was shining brightly in a perfectly normal blue sky, and large white everyday clouds drifted lazily by overhead. The only strange thing was how utterly quiet it was. Morrill turned to look at Silence.
Are we in the right place, Captain? Hell, are we even on the right planet? There shouldn't be anything like this on a rock like 00.
Oh, I think we can safely assume we've come to the right place. Everyone turn slowly and look behind yourself.
They all turned and looked, and there was Base Omega, rising up before them, pristine and untouched. there was no trace of any damage, and the security forescreen that should have isolated it from the rest of Zero Zero wasn't operating. The front door stood open, but there were no signs of life or any sound at all from within.
This is decidedly spooky. I don't know what I expected to find down here, but this sure as hell isn't it. The commander said she was going to blow this place up.
Every indication was that she had. The reports were quite clear. Every system in Base Omega went offline at once, and there hasn't been a signal of any kind from here since.
So what's this in front of us?
You're the Esper, you tell me.
Morrell nodded stiffly and stared fiercely at the base, as though he could make it disappear through sheer willpower. His frown deepened as he reached out with his mind.
Well, it's not an illusion or a telepathic broadcast. It has a physical existence, but I'm not picking up any life signs inside.
Widen your scan. Is there anyone anywhere near here?
Morrell closed his eyes and concentrated.
I'm picking up something, but I can't make any sense of it. There's certainly nothing human in the vicinity, and no trace of intelligent life for as far as I can scan. No lesser creatures either, not even insects in the air or in the ground. But I'm getting something. It's like a muttering or a chant or just white noise. But it's coming from everywhere at once, and it moves so fast. Captain, I've no idea what I'm picking up here. I've never encountered anything like it.
Does it feel dangerous? Threatening?
Damned if I know, Captain. This is entirely outside of my experience.
All right. Let's try the obvious route. See if I can raise anyone in the base on my comm implant.
Silence turned to face the open doors, wanting to be ready if anything came charging out.
This is Captain John Silence of the Dauntless, representing the Empire. Is anybody listening? Is there anyone in Base Omega who can hear me? Make yourself known.
Baron shifted his feet uneasily.
Maybe the nanotech just wore out, and everything went back to normal again?
Unlikely. First, if the nanos had died out or ceased to function, this should be bare volcanic rock. Secondly, the nanos were programmed to reproduce themselves indefinitely, using the whole planet as material if necessary. In fact, I'm almost surprised the planet is still here with so many nanos at work for so many years. This, all of this, should not be here. It cannot be natural.
If Base Omega has survived by whatever miracle, the lab computers could still be intact. They might still have information on the nanotech and exactly what it was originally coded with. Hell, there might even be information on how to shut the damned stuff down.
If the computers are there, and if we could trust what we found in them. This smells more and more like a trap of some kind. An intact Base Omega just waiting for us to make use of it? That's too good to be true. Remember the Shab and Haydenman ships we found abandoned in orbit? This could be their doing. Though the motivation, frankly, escapes me for the moment. But we can't just stand around here. We have a maximum of 4 hours' air inside these shields. When the shields run out, we'd better be a comfortably far distance off this world.
We can't ignore the base.
No, we can't.
Silence looked at Carrion, knowing the man was remembering a similar time on Unseelie, when they had stood together before the open doors to Base 13, not knowing of the awful thing that lay waiting for them inside.
This is Base Commander Jorgensen.
Everyone stiffened and looked around sharply. They knew that voice.
Commander, security has been breached. There are monsters and nightmares running loose in the corridors. This is Jorgensen signing off.
They all looked at each other.
It can't be her. She can't be still alive.
If she was really in there, I'd have detected her. There's no living being in that base.
Perhaps some kind of recording triggered by our presence. I don't know if you noticed, but all the words we just heard came from Jorgensen's last broadcast. That can't be a coincidence.
Could be some attempt at communication, put into a form we'd recognize. Try answering it, Captain. See if you can get it to respond with something that wasn't in Jorgensen's last message.
I agree. We need as much information on the current situation as possible if we are to put an end to it and regain control of this planet.
Oh, great. The only living thing we've found here, and you only want to communicate with it to learn how to destroy it. I guess, once an investigator, always an investigator. Maybe it'll be something small and furry, so you can stamp on it.
That's enough, Marl. Carrion is doing his job. You do yours. Scan the base again while I try and make contact with the voice. See if you can find out who or what I'm talking to.
Well, perhaps it's hiding behind an S-blocker. And that's why you can't detect it.
No, I'd have detected the ESP blocker. Nice try, though.
Silence opened his comm channel again.
This is Captain Silence. Can you hear me, Commander Jorgensen?
Hear you. Yes, Jorgensen.
Scanning, Captain. There's no one in the base. No one at all.
And who the hell am I talking to?
Me. You were talking to me.
They all looked around sharply, and there she was, standing in the open doorway to the base. She looked exactly as she had on the last log entry she'd made before supposedly blowing up her base. Exactly the same, even down to the bloody, scorched wound on her side. Her face was calm and utterly without expression. Her arms hung limply at her sides. Silence looked at Morrell, who shook his head quickly.
I don't know what that is, but it's not human. I'm not picking up any thoughts at all from her. As far as my Esp is concerned, she's not there. I will say this, though. She looks in pretty good shape for someone who's supposed to have been dead for centuries.
Silence moved slowly toward Jorgensen. The woman stood perfectly still. Her eyes were dead.
Putting aside for one moment the question of who you seem to be, can you answer some questions? Can you tell us what's happened here on this planet?
I am Base Commander Jorgensen. This world has been transformed. Transfigured, become a world of possibilities and potentials. Nothing is certain anymore. Things come and go. All your dreams are here, including the bad ones. Welcome to the Promised Land.
I don't know if anyone else has noticed, but she only breathes when she talks.
If you are, Jorgensen, why didn't you blow up Base Omega as you intended?
I did. The base was destroyed, and everyone in it died, including me.
I think I'd like to leave. Right now.
Shut up, Marl. Carrion, you try talking to her for a while. You have the most experience with dead things that insist on moving about and talking.
Jorgensen, if you died, who brought you back to life?
Jesus raised me from the dust so that we could talk, communicate.
Good of him. I think I feel sick. I don't suppose Jesus is still around anywhere, so we could ask him a few questions directly.
Captain, look behind you.
They all spun around, and there before them, standing smiling in a simple rough tunic, was a tall, fine-featured man with long dark hair and a beard, and kind, knowing eyes. A crown of thorns rested lightly on his head, like a barbed halo. And when he raised a hand in greeting to the landing party, they could see the nail hole in his palm. He had an aura of wisdom and serenity, and his presence was like a cool breeze on a hot day. But the real clincher had to be the half a dozen winged angels hovering overhead, each a good 20 feet tall in long flowing white gowns, with glowing halos and huge feathered wingspans.
Welcome to the world I have made for you. Welcome to Paradise.